Shmini is a brief aliyah with some important topics in it, and in a sense, it's appropriate for today. It's always a mystery. Today is Yom HaShoah, and Parsha Shmini in general involves a literal Shoah, a conflagration, a death that comes through fire. It's really what the word Holocaust comes from. Associated with a much wider scale, but it comes from the word meaning death through fire, and that's what happens in this week's Parsha. And here in Revi, we're in the aftermath of that. So in a sense, it's a little bit relevant and a little bit helpful, but it really highlights just the idea of being told to keep going, that here the remnants of the family of Aaron are told that they have to continue and go ahead with the process of the Miluim. That's essentially what this Aliyah is about. And there are some references here in terms of what had happened beforehand, which just kind of highlight the fact that we don't know HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Cheshbonos. We don't know the math. We don't know how it all adds up. And that's alluded to in some of the comments of Chazal that you find in this aliyah. So to begin with, Pasuk begins, Pasuk Yudbeis in Perek Yud, Vayedaber Moshe el Aaron v'el Elazar v'el Yisamar banav hanosarim k'chu es hamincha hanoseres me'yishe Hashem v'yichluha matzos eitzel hamizbeach ki kodesh kodeshim hi. So Moshe tells Aaron and Elazar and Yisamar, they've all just had this horrible tragedy. Aaron has lost two sons, Elazar and Yisamar have lost two brothers. They are the remaining sons, and they're told to take the mincha that is left over and to eat that in matzah form by the mizbeach. What does eitzel mizbeach mean halachically? It's a point we'll come to at the end because it's relevant to a few other details. And we're told that it is kodesh kadoshim, and therefore this halacha of eitzel hamizbeach, the Gemara understands, that's telling us that it has to be eaten in the azara. We'll discuss a little bit more about that later, and that's a requirement for kodshei kodshim in general, that they have to be eaten in the azara. So here, first of all, the Gemara has a comment in Maseches Brachos that it matters of the gedula, so you start from the gadol, so that's somehow associated with this pasuk. The Marsha has a comment that it's not from the fact that he addressed Aaron first, because that just makes sense. He's going to talk to Aaron first, and Elazar is older than Isamar. It's also not necessarily reflective of any great Yisod. So the Marsha suggests that the Gemara is telling us that really the names could have been left out completely. It says Banav Hanosarim, we know who they are. So the mentioning of the sons is a way to highlight the fact that there's a Hilchos Derech Eretz here that you address the oldest first in these contexts. But the language Hanosarim is a very loaded language. Those who are left over, the survivors, so to speak. So what exactly is meant to be conveyed by this language of Nosarim? So Rashi has a comment right over here from the Gemara Maseches Yuma, Daf Pei Zayin, which is to suggest that they were also a part of this Gezeira, that they were also those who could have ended up being lost. The Gemara is suggesting that this is a effect of the Maisa HaEgel, that the Pasuk tells us in Parshas Ekev, just I'll read you the pasuk. Open up. Since we have another chumash here, so we can have two chumashim open at the same time. So it's a pasuk in Perek Tes. Pasuk Chaf. The pasuk says, "The Aaron is anaf Hashem ma'od lahashmido." That Aaron was also the subject of Hashem's anger to a great degree, and God was going to destroy him, which, as Rashi over here in Akev tells us, that's a reference to his lineage, not to him personally, but to his sons. So really, they were all going to be wiped out as a consequence of the Aram, of the Ego, rather. So there, that pasuk continues, that Moshe says, V'yas palel gam ba'ar Aaron ba'is ha'hi. So Moshe says, I also davened on behalf of Aaron. And that had a partial effect. So it spared some of his sons. Again, what exactly this tells us about how these cheshbonos are made, it tells us very little except to highlight the complexity. We know that in terms of Nadav and Avihu's punishment, elsewhere in Chazal, we have many suggestions what it was for, that they had done their own personal misdeeds. And here, Chazal are telling us that it's a consequence of Aaron's misdeed, or Aaron's mistake, let's put it. So how exactly is that meant to be understood? The Sifsei Chachamim comments on Rashi in our Aliyah that perhaps it's a combination of factors that why specifically it ended up being these two sons as opposed to the other two sons. Once Moshe was partially successful in undoing the Gzeirah and partially undoing the Gzeirah, so maybe that's a consequence of things that they had done wrong, or why did it have to be now? All kinds of questions we can't really answer. I think the only real takeaway here, again, is just how complicated these cheshbonos are. Rav Schwab in his Sefer has a comment over here that also perhaps the idea that it was going to be half the sons were going to survive, so why was it Nadav and Avihu who were taken instead of Elazar and Isamar? So he suggests it's because Nadav and Avihu were single, which is not to criticize them for that, but rather to say that Elazar and Isamar had families, so whatever Xavier there was in Aaron wasn't necessarily supposed to extend to the wives and children. So therefore, if we're going to save two, the ones with families end up being the ones that are saved. Again, we don't know exactly how to interpret all these things, but highlights the complexity of the cheshbonos, as does another point, that the same Gemara in Yuma, which suggests that this is why they were taken, so then the Gemara makes an apparently completely contradictory point that the Gzeirah was on them, but they were saved. You see the power of Zchusavos, that it goes on forever. So what do you mean the power of Zchusavos? It was their father who got them in trouble. So what does that mean, the Zchusavos? The Torah Tanima discusses this, is that you have to assume that it's not a reference to Aaron, it's really a reference to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and saying that their schus continues to have a ripple effect down to their children. And again, you know, what do we do with all this? We just see that Kadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbonos are beyond us, that whatever it is, there's a math that we're not able to really hold cup. Rav Hirsch comments also on the language here, that there is a difference between Nosar and Nishar. That the language of the Pasuk, Hanosarib, it's meant to say something which consisted with this Gemara, suggests that Nosar means it was also destined for destruction, as opposed to Nishar, that which is left is completely separate from the picture. Nosar is that which remains and really was a part of the picture, means that it was also set aside for destruction. He says that's actually what the rest of the Pasuk is talking about. It's, you know, certainly striking. From a linguistic perspective, you find the word in such a different context coming up a few words later.
So but Nishar is what?
Nishar would mean something that's completely distinct. So it's not really a part of this Gzeirah. While Nosar means that it was subject to this Gzeirah and yet it escaped, so to speak, it was left over, while Nishar would not have that connotation. And so it is striking how the Pasuk says here, Al Yisamar Banav, Al Zar Al Yisamar Banav Hanosarim. It seems like it's a completely different context, but to have that word again so soon after, so Rav Hirsch says it's the same thing, that Nosar, we talk about it as something bad in Karbanos, so it means that it's not supposed to be left over, it was supposed to be consumed like the rest of the Karban, and it's not supposed to be around anymore, so it's left over, so that's called Nosar. And here it means that it's a part of the Karban, and that's the idea that we find, that this is considered to be something, the mincha is considered to be something from the Mizbeach. So that's the expression the Gemara has, Mishulchan Kavoa Kazachu, that when it's consumed, so to speak, from the table of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, meaning from the Mizbeach, that this is not something that was held back and not put in the Mizbeach, this is something that's from the Mizbeach and is being taken and is now being consumed. And the Paras Yosef, he has other linguistic suggestions as to the difference between Nosar and Nishar. It's not always so clear how to understand them. One, it's not really clear what this would mean for this pasuk, but he quotes from the Malbim and others that Nosar means something that was left, so to speak, without kavana, while Nishar means something that's intentionally left out. which is perhaps similar to what Rav Hirsch said, but in a really different way. What does it mean without kavana? I'm not really sure what he means, but he comments the Paras Yosef on that interpretation, but that's difficult when we talk about nosar in the karbana sense. So are you saying that if it was left intentionally, if it was left with kavana, so then that's not subject to halachas of nosar? And the pasuk says lo so siru, that you're not supposed to leave it over. The whole point is to tell you that you're not supposed to intentionally leave it over. So to say that if it's intentionally left over, it's going to have a different word, it's hard to understand. But he quotes also another interpretation, which is also consistent on some level, that nishar means that which is not mishutof from haklal, is not really a part of the unit, it's something wholly distinct, while nosar is something that is a part of the unit and is left. So again, just especially at Yom HaShoah, to read the idea of Hanosarim, you know, the survivors, those who are a part of the unit, who remain, and to reflect upon the fact that they're connected, that they're not distinct and wholly separate, but that we're all a part of the unit of Klal Yisrael, and the losses that happen within our community are losses that are connected to us in a very profound way, either that we are a part of that Gzeira and we're spared, so to speak, or that we are all connected in the impact of the loss, something which calls our attention to that in a powerful way. So the pasuk tells us that they are commanded to take this mincha, kechuas ha-mincha. This Naim Latorah has a comment over here, I guess this is giving some dietary advice, that the word mincha here is before the basar l'shlamim, to tell you that you should eat bread with meat and not the other way around. Say you want a little meat with your bread, and you want a little bread with your meat. You know, what's the ikker? So there is some of the Torah is trying to teach us that really the meat should be the smaller part of the consumption, whatever impact that has. But he also notes that you know, I have to figure out. So Dr. Atkins for sure wouldn't approve. But you know, this is hard to know the impact of such a statement. But he also comments here that the encouragement to eat has to do with the fact that an avel, in general, doesn't have an appetite. The Avel doesn't want to eat. So that's why, for example, at the beginning of Shiva, so you have a Sudas Havra, so you have that the meal has to be given by others, because the assumption is that the Avel will not take care of himself in that way, is not going to choose to eat, because there is a complete emotional disconnect from any such desire, so therefore others have to take care of it, and that's why here also, so we need this special encouragement. And that's what we find in the next pasuk, that pasuk states, V'achaltem osa b'makom kadosh, ki chakcha v'chak banecha hi, me'ishei Hashem ki chein suvesi. This is how I have been commanded. So this emphasis of, this is how I am commanded, this is how you are commanded, that the point is, as the first comments, others comment, that normally an onein is prohibited to eat kachim. So even a kohen gadol, who is makriv as an onein, who does bring karbanos in the state of aninus, it's important to point out that we talk about aninus. So aninus, as we relate to it nowadays, is really a concept to midrabanan, that to the extent that it's a kesher with avelus. So avelus as an institution in general, we assume la halacha that avelus is midrabanan. There were rishonim who felt that avelus to some degree is deraisa, more or less, depending on the different versions. But we assume la halacha that avelus is drabanan, and that aninus is essentially associated with that. And the p'tur of mitzvos that you find in aninus, that's what aninus really represents to us today, is that there is a, either that's something associated with the avelus, that's a discussion in the Rishonim, or it has to do with osik v'mitzvah patim in a mitzvah, which is not really about avelus per se, but is a specific implementation of a general principle, that because you have other things to focus on, so then you're going to be exempt from other mitzvahs. But the concept of avelus min ha-Torah is what we find here in the context of kachim, that Aaron says, v'achalti chatas hayom ha-yitav b'nei Hashem, that Aaron says that my relationship to kachim is going to be affected by his status as an onein. And that's what we find also nowadays, also impacting halach l'maisa, that an onen doesn't eat meat or drink wine. So that's not because of avelos per se, because during Shiva he can eat meat and drink wine. And that the idea is that this is modeled after the din of aninus deraisa, which is an exclusion from kachim, and ideally meat and wine is meant from a kachim context, which is also why we abstain from meat and wine during the 9 days. So we associate that with the avelos of the 9 days, and it feels like perhaps the most blatant expression of the avelos of the 9 days. But really, it's because of the specific nature of the avelos is the lack of the Beis HaMikdash. So we emphasize our separation from kachim by separating from basar v'yayin. So that's really what it's about. So you have this obligation of aninus min haTorah. So a Kohen Gadol, like Aaron, he would bring karbanos in aninus, but kachim you wouldn't eat. The way Rav Hirsch expresses it is that when it comes to the achilas kachim, the purpose of achilas kachim is his languages, or his language as translated into English, but his German is something which corresponds to the English, to elevate subjective enjoyment to a level of symbolic avoda, that he's supposed to take his eating and that's supposed to be an expression of avoda. So that's very difficult to do because it's going to be impossible for him to disassociate from his emotions. The Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, Mishnah in Sanhedrin, has a statement that Eina Aninus Ela Belev, that Aninus represents the inner emotional state. So for the Achila, that's not something that you're going to be able to do. That if you're supposed to take this experience of Achila and elevate it into something else, in a state of Aninus, it's not going to be possible. But here you find that they had to anyway. So why did they have to do this? Because the Pasuk says, Ki Chavcha, that is what's going to give the Kohanim their status, that they're essentially, this is part of the Miluim process, this is part of the Yom HaShmini, so the Mishkan is being inaugurated, and the Kohanim are being given their charge, and therefore it's necessary, they have to take part of this process in order for that to happen, even though they are otherwise in a situation of aninus, which shouldn't normally allow it. It's interesting, it's not what the Sfarim say per se, but maybe it's the same idea. We do have this notion that the Yom HaShmini, especially as it's portrayed in the beginning of the parsha, before things take such a dark turn, is that this is a tremendous yantif. This was like the creation of the world. This was a tremendous simcha, the inauguration of the Mishkan. And of course, on a personal level, for Aaron's family, it becomes a very tragic day. But we know that within halacha, so when you have yantif, so yantif overrides the personal avelus. The Gemara has the expression, asi esed rabim, vatla esed yachid, tsar yachid, that the obligation on the individual is to put aside his personal anguish and to join in the communal celebration. That's what yantif calls for. So to hear, it's possible to say that you have the same kind of theme going on, that this is Klal Yisrael's miluim, that's what we need, and even the individual who is in aninus, is in avelus, is asked to set that aside, and is asked to focus on being a part of the communal celebration, and therefore that takes priority. So in any event, so they have to participate, and then there are some halachas of kachim that are derived from the rest of the aliyah here. So in terms of the Shiari Mincha, what was left of the Mincha, so there's some dinim, just to mention some of the dinim that the Gemara has and the Medrash has, Rashi quotes many of these dinim from the rest of the aliyah, that it has to be eaten the Mokum Kadosh, it has to be eaten the Shiari Mincha, which is Kachay Kachim, has to be eaten in a holy place, while the Chaza and Chok have to be eaten in a Tahar place. Right, so that's what Pasuk Yudal says. V'es chazei ha'tenufa v'yeis shok ha'truma tochlu makom tahor. Ata uvanecha uvnosecha itach ki chakcha v'chak banecha nitnu mizivchei shalmei b'nei Yisrael. So what exactly are the differences here if you compare the two psukim? So the previous Pasuk says that kachay kachim should be eaten b'makom kadosh. So that's a reference to the Azara. And the Gemara asks, from the previous pasuk it says, Eitzel HaMizbeach, so should that be taken to mean that it's literally next to the Mizbeach as opposed to the rest of the Azara, like you sometimes find? So the Gemara says, no, it's not meant to convey that, but there are other chidushim that come from that language of Eitzel Mizbeach. One is to show that it's connected to the Mizbeach, thematically, that it's mechaper, just like the Mizbeach is, and also that it is tied in halachically to the Mizbeach, that if the Mizbeach is nifgam, if the Mizbeach is incomplete, if it's pasul, so too the menachos also become pasul. So we find that the ketchei kachim have to be eaten in the Azara, and they're only eaten by the zichrei kahuna, they're only eaten by the males of the kahuna, in distinction to the chazei v'shok in the next pasuk. So that's makom tahar, so that doesn't mean makom kodesh, kadosh doesn't mean the Azara specifically, but means Yerushalayim, it has to be within the walls of Yerushalayim, and that, you see the language is banecha uvnosecha, that can be eaten by the females also. But the chakcha part, the Gemara tells us, is that the division, that giving out, that's a zchus to the male kohanim, but the actual eating, so that can be done by the females as well. So we have all of these halachas of kachim, which are being conveyed at this very difficult moment for Aaron's family, and the whole parsha here, in the middle of the parsha, this whole aftermath of this tremendous avelus being forced to go on and being forced to say that, okay, this is what happened, but we still have our communal responsibilities and the nation still needs us. So, again, it's a very relevant message here on Yom HaShoah. It's also a relevant message for Sfira. That the idea of Sfira Sa'omer, which has taken on a... attitude of avelus. That's what we find. Our minhag is to observe the days of Sfira with an atmosphere of mourning, even though that's not what we find in the Torah. The Torah doesn't portray it that way, and it's not what we find in the Gemara either. It's a newer development, a topic of much discussion as to how exactly that developed. My father, Zichron Levrach, actually wrote an article about this for the Encyclopedia Judaica. It was a topic he was very interested in terms of tracking all the literature about this. But what's most commonly associated with the idea the Gemara has in Maseches Yevamos, that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva died during this time, that there was a tremendous magefa, and there were 24,000 Talmidim, and they all died during this time. And the Gemara says, why did that happen? It happened day shalonogu kavod zelazeh. It happened because they didn't show honor to each other. And Chazal, in a different place, have a comment one step further, saying that so tnu daitchem, that you should pay attention to what happened, and that you should realize that we have to be more careful about this. That we have to make sure to pay attention to showing proper respect to one another, and that's the avoda of Sfira. The whole Gemara is very striking, if this really is the idea that the Avelus is connected to the Talmidim of Bikiva. There's some debate about that, but that's certainly what's most frequently mentioned. This Gemara, talking about this Tekufa specifically, the idea that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva should be associated with the lack of kavod zelazeh is very striking, especially Rabbi Akiva, we know, is the Bala Maimer of Yehav Tzorecha Kamocha, is that called Gadol BaTorah, that this is the great principle from which so many other dinim are learned, that should be the fate of his Talmidim, is particularly painful. And I mentioned also that my father, Zichron Levracha, was particularly pained by this, that he was happy to see quotations that talked about the letter of Rosh Shriragon, where he suggested that it's actually a coded reference, and that the Talmidim, the reason they died is because they were soldiers in the Bar Kokhba rebellion. So that was how they died, and it couldn't be explicitly stated what exactly the story was in the Gemara, so it's a coded reference to that, and that it's Lashon Sagi Nor, of course, they did show kavod to each other, and We shouldn't think that that was the behavior of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, but nonetheless, one way or another, that's the message that Chazal take away from it, either that we should be like them and realize we have to treat others with kavod, or that the literal reading of the Gemara, that we should be not like them and we should treat others with kavod. But either way, the takeaway is the same, that Sfiras HaOmer is a time in which we're told to recognize that there was tremendous loss and to respond by focusing on the requirement to treat everyone else with dignity and respect. Comments about
it's
that?
It's also interesting that Rabbi Akiva was the one who learns out the S in the Hasar Shalom Kavakira.
Kavak Tamir Chachamim, right.
Ostensibly, they were.
He's associated with both things. He's right? Associated with Yehavta Rech Kamocha being the Klal Gadol and this specific Drasha, which there's a lot to say about also. But it is striking. Right? So, this is a part of what my father appreciated, to say that maybe it wasn't the case that they were disrespectful to each other, but that they were involved in other activities that led to their death, and that they were respectful to each other. But either way, the point is the same. Either way, that halach l'maisa, the takeaway is that we have to be able to show respect to each other. And clearly, nowadays, we see that that's not happening so well. And I think it is possible to say, and maybe we'll expand on this a little bit Sunday from a halachic perspective, that we know that Sfiras HaOmer, we have a very difficult halacha. Sfiras HaOmer is both the easiest and the hardest mitzvah that we have. Rav Kook has that expression by Tshuva, I think we've quoted in the past. So Sfiras HaOmer, maybe it's a runner-up to that category, both categories, the easiest and the hardest, because as far as easy, you know, it's certainly in the category the Gemara has of Davar Shein Bo Chisaron Kis or anything else, and it doesn't cost any money, you don't need any accessories, it doesn't take very much time. It's a lot easier than Shnayim Mikra V'Echatarga, and it's just a one-second thing. So in terms of practice, it's the easiest thing to do. But for some of us, it's the hardest mitzvah because it involves that very tricky mission to remember to do something. So that can be tremendously difficult for the more absent-minded among us. So as easy it is to perform, once you remember, it's very easy to forget. So the idea that we have, that we take into account the position of the Bahag, that if a day is missed, so we're not able to keep counting with the bracha, so that's always a source of a lot of challenge and frustration to all of us to try to make sure that we don't miss any days. And perhaps Al Pi Hashkafa, that ties in here as well, that how is it possible to say or even think that maybe Talmidei Chachamim wouldn't have respect for each other? It's such a violation of everything that we stand for. So how is that possibly the case? So maybe the idea is that on the one hand, you know, we're all about focus and we think that we have to keep our eye on the prize and we have to look towards what's important. But that also has a downside to it. So if you're too focused on that which is important, so there are problems that can come out of that. So you could imagine, let's say the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, they get to go to the greatest shir around. I mean, what a schus that is, to be able to attend the shir of Rabbi Akiva. It's really quite a thing. So Rabbi Akiva's shir was the shir to be at. So to run towards shir, that could seem like that's the most important goal you have. And if you have to knock somebody over on the way because you're on the way to shir, so look, you're doing something important. You're running to shir. I can't really worry so much the fact that you're pushing somebody out of your way in the front. And we're being taught here that, no, that's also important. Just like Sfiras HaOmer, we're counting towards the Kabbalah Satorah. That's the goal. That's what it's all about. But we're also told that you can't forget any steps in between, that to just run right to the finish line and to not pay attention to all the steps in the middle, that's going to be missing something very significant. And so too, if you're going to run so fast to shir that you're going to knock over everybody in between, you're not going to pay attention to them, so that's also going to be a tremendous loss. So we're taught that our path towards Kabbalah Satorah has to also have an attention to everything between here and there. There was a study they once did in Princeton Theological Seminary, in a Christian seminary, I believe it was 1973, that they wanted to see if people would help if somebody was on the street and it looked like he needed assistance and people were passing him by, would they stop and help? So they had seminary students who were on the way to deliver a sermon, and they planted actors along the way who seemed to be in distress, and they wanted to see if they would actually stop. And the irony is that the sermon they were going to give was the story of the Good Samaritan, which is about stopping and helping people, and a very small percentage of the people going to deliver a sermon about this actually stopped to help a person in need. So that's certainly troubling. What's also troubling, because very relevant to our lives, is that I think they discovered that the most relevant factor was how much of a rush you were in. That the more you're in a rush, so the more you find it hard to internalize the messages that you're being taught and to pay attention to those around you. So the ones who were told, oh, you're late already, they're waiting for you to start the speech, so they were the ones who were least likely to stop and help. And we're always in a rush. That's, you know, the way life is. And it's very easy to forget about the needs of people around us in such a context. And that's perhaps the message also when it comes to Sfira. They ask, we're counting down to the Kabbalah Sa Torah, but we can't be in so much of a rush that that we're going to forget about the people around us. It's just, while you're talking about such an idea, it's impossible not to mention the unbelievable travesty so that happened on Chol HaMoed Pesach, that at the funeral of one of the true Gedolei Hador, that such a thing should happen, that Rachmana Litzlan, that two people should die because they were pushed by other people. How that could even enter into anyone's mind, that no matter what's going on, that that's the way to be. The Gemara says clearly, when it is the context even of a mitzvah, there's a whole discussion in the Magen Avraham and the Machtzeh Shekel and others, but the Gemara says the expression v'hatznuim moshchem misyadehim, that even when you're pursuing something that is an actual mitzvah or is involved in a mitzvah, still if it involves pushing somebody out of the way, that's not the way to be. You'll have other opportunities. It's no honor to the mitzvah, and it's certainly no honor to the nifter that you push people out of the way. That's the Gemara says, that's not the kind of behavior that we're talking about. The Ramban has a comment in Chumash that Yosef endangered himself because he didn't want to push somebody. That Yosef got in trouble because Eshes Potiphar had his coat, and she used that to frame him for accusing him of misbehavior with her. So the Ramban asks, you know, presumably he was stronger than her, so why didn't he just take it back? So the Ramban writes that that's, you know, it's not the Derech Eretz, it's not the way it is, not going to grab it out of her hands. So nowadays we see that's very much lost, and that's this, here at the beginning of Sfiras HaOmer, for such a thing to happen, that's very much the message, that no matter what you think you're accomplishing, I don't know what kind of mitzvah they thought that to come closer to the Aron at the funeral, I don't know how that's even a pretend mitzvah, but even if it were a real mitzvah, so it's clear that we have standards of behavior, and that first, the basic covet to each other is a core responsibility, and it's a core avoda through Sfiras HaOmer, that should be a part of what we're developing. Hi. All right, so we'll give you a minute for that. But in any event, you know, so the aftermath of tragedies, smaller tragedies, bigger tragedies, what we read about in the Parsha, Yom HaShoah, so we don't have any answers for anything, but all we can remember is that the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are way beyond us, but that we have to cherish each other, and that we have to realize that life is fragile and precious, and that we are commanded to be respectful of others as a recognition of the fact that creative Bitzelem Elokim, and it's fleeting, and it's fragile, and it's precious, and you're here today and gone tomorrow, and that sensitivity should express itself in our behavior, and the appreciation for those around us should express itself in our behavior, and our path to Kabbalah Satorah during the Sfiras HaOmer should be one in which a greater degree of respect, a greater degree of sensitivity becomes a given, becomes the definition of our behavior. All right, so maybe we'll stop here. We'll daven mincha in a minute. So let Aaron question first.